it's time for Homegrown on 94.7 WPBC LP Charlottesville with your hosts Clinton Johnston and Leslie M. Scott Jones, Charlottesville's only radio show devoted to local arts. And now,
good morning, Sunday morning. Whether you are an art maker, an art faker, an art breaker, or an art partaker, welcome all, because of course all are welcome to Homegrown, your show about local art, brought to you by the Blue Moon Diner. I'm the one they call Clinton, and I'm here with a person who takes the morn out of Sunday morning, Leslie. I'm Scott Jones.
Well, good morning, Clinton. That was lovely. Thank you.
You're welcome, Leslie. Good morning. How are you?
I am surprisingly chipper.
Surprisingly chipper?
Why? I am surprisingly chipper.
Why is your chipperness a surprise?
You know, the past few weeks have just been lovely.
Just lovely.
You know, just happiness and light and all that. I'm happy.
Yeah. Wow, that's great.
Isn't it?
That's great.
It's nice, right?
I'm so pleased for you.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of the appropriate innuendo to suggest for reasons, but I think our regular listeners know.
Oh, I think our regular listeners know exactly what's making me happy right now.
There you go.
It's you, Clinton. It's you.
Thank you.
You are making me happy.
That would be a first.
Oh, Clinton. I wore my pigtails for you today.
I noticed that. I'm quite pleased.
I know.
And and I feel sorry for our listeners that they do not get a chance to see the wonderful pigtailness.
Right? Because I'm adorable in the pigtails.
You were always adorable. What are you talking about?
It's just
shades of adorability.
Right? And I've just turned it just up a little bit.
Just a little bit. this adorability goes at 11. Let's talk about our parental advisory. Going to start the show with a parental advisory, which we frequently do. If you are a parental out there, we are advising you. At one point in the show, we may say the word hypsographic. Hypsographic. So if you have young ones, teeny tiny ones, little ones, or maybe big ones who are emotionally little ones, you might want to protect them. You might want to take their heads and dump them into vats of water, big tanks of water.
Clinton!
To keep them, rather than have them here.
Oh my goodness.
The shockingness of a word like hypsographic.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You've been advised.
Everybody just Google that really quickly, or, you know, dictionary.com, whatever
Stay away from
works
it.
For you.
Stay away from it. Ignorance is bliss. Ignorance is purity.
No.
Ignorance is purity.
No, it's not.
Let's head up to our first guest today. Joining us for the first time on Homegrown. Oh, we're so pleased to have her here. Playwright and director as well, Sherry Bailey.
Good morning.
Good morning, Sherry. How are you?
I'm doing great. I don't know if I'm doing as great as you guys are, but I'm doing great.
It's that theater background. We seem greater than we are. Of course we're doing great, because you're here. How can we not be doing great?
Oh, you smooth operator, you.
So you are here, and you're visiting our fair city.
Indeed.
From?
I am from Portsmouth, born and raised in Portsmouth, Virginia, right there on the east coast of Virginia.
Close to the hurricanes. That's what I call that.
Well, you know what happens is that it comes from the south and it hops over our region and then picks back up in Maryland, D.C. It happens all the time.
Ooh, so you've got the little hurricane shield somehow.
Something's going on.
That's nice.
Which is wonderful because apparently we have no evacuation route in the area.
Yeah.
So we really kind of,
yeah, it's one road.
Pretty much.
It seems like a surprising amount of America is evacuation free.
Unfortunately.
Fortunately, we're not in any type of situation where extreme or changing weather might have that bite us in the ass.
No, of course we're not.
Of course not.
That's never going to happen.
But what is going to happen is the show that you've been bringing here.
Yes.
Would you like to tell us about this show?
Abolitionist Museum. We have 8 historical figures in a wax museum. Those 8 are John Brown, Harriet Beecher Stowe, Frederick Douglass, Abraham Lincoln, Sojourner Truth, Harriet Tubman, Nat Turner, and David Walker. They are wax figures in this museum. The museum curator brings in a Confederate flag, and they come to life to debate whether or not to burn this flag in their place of residence. And the big part of the show is...
Hello!
At the end of it, we ask the audience, we have a post-show conversation. Okay, you are a resident in this abolitionist museum. What would your vote be, to burn or not to burn?
See, there you go. There you go.
You know I'm a big fan of the talk back. I like this one.
You think you might have something to say about any of that,
burn,
Leslie?
Baby, burn. Burn, burn, baby, burn, 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 burn.
Yeah, I think I might have a few little things to say about that. That's yeah, that's a conversation I would love to have.
Leslie gets up with the talk back, bump bump fire.
And I would dare anyone to go against me.
Well, and here's the deal about that. The goal is to create that space where you can speak honestly and openly without fear of someone insulting you or making you feel uncomfortable. This is the space that we're trying to create, because that is what democracy is all about, is being able to have a variety of opinions and then decide, you know, which one works for everyone.
Wait, I thought democracy was about sound bites and and throwing insults at each other.
No. You've been watching too many presidential debates, Dare.
They told me that's where you found the democracy.
No, but I mean, these are the conversations that need to happen. I mean, and I think the reason that I hate this term, but race relations is at the point that it is in this country is because we haven't been having these conversations. No one actually talks about it logically and rationally. They just get defensive and, you know, and pissy and start yelling at each other, and that doesn't solve anything. And then nobody wants to have the conversation because they don't want to hurt anybody's feelings.
Exactly. I mean, we have people who throw chairs at each other in town hall meetings,
right.
And that tends not to be useful in terms of solving problems and moving forward.
Right.
So that's what our goal is to, in fact, our line is no shame, no blame. We cannot change this history. We cannot make it go away, but we must figure out what it was and how do we move beyond and forward.
Mm-hmm. So is it like a theatricalized Truth and Reconciliation Commission?
Well, that's a nice way to put it. And I, you know, indeed, the goal is to create a tool that can be used by other communities and other groups, you know. So we're doing a lot of just kind of really trying to construct a model that can be, again, sustainable and used by others to be able to have these conversations in their own communities.
So you keep saying we. Talk about the group that's behind this.
Well, my producer, one of the producers, Jim Mustin, is a gentleman who's from Alabama, and he grew up.
Oh my!
Yeah, he grew up in a world where he was privileged, and had all of the advantages that come from being a descendant of slaveholders. And for Jim, this has been a way of being able to work through that past and that history, and again, come out with something positive that moves us forward. So he is. He and I met through a group called Coming to the Table, and Coming to the Table has roots here in Charlottesville because it first formed with the descendants of Jefferson on his black side with Sally Hemings, and of course on his white side, you know. And so those descendants
with the Randolphs
had to have a meeting of the souls, and out of that meeting has evolved a group called Coming to the Table, which is composed of descendants of the enslaved and the enslavers. And so Jim and I met through that group, and I had done a reading of this play for the Coming to the Table folks. Mm-hmm. And Jim said, we need to do that play. We need to get that up and running in Charlottesville. And just as that was all coming together, the controversy over the Robert E. Lee statue came
dropped.
Into focus just like that, you know. And literally, they are due back with their recommendations sometime near the end of this month, early next month. And so we feel this opportunity to have this play happening at this time is divinely inspired in many ways.
Mm-hmm. So you are the play's playwright.
Correct.
How long have you been? How long have you been working with this play? I mean, when did you finish writing it?
I wrote this play. It had its first premiere at the second annual Hampton Roads Juneteenth Festival in 1998 in the city of Virginia Beach, in fact. And it has been a wonderful experience to take this play into schools, particularly middle school students. And they really respond to it, and they get to the post-show conversation, and they are involved in, you know, a real conversation. And it's been really exciting to see their response to it, because most of them get that you can't change history and you can't make it go away. But they don't really see burning the flag. They see that it belongs in a museum where, you know, people can kind of study and understand what it's all about. But it doesn't belong flying above a state capitol, because at that point it's saying that it represents everyone who lives in that state. And they don't see that as being, you know, a viable answer to, you know, the situation of these Confederate monuments and so forth.
You know, it's really interesting looking at how children deal with issues like this when they are tasked to interact with them. I just was listening to a report about, because we just went through Columbus Day, and I was just listening to a report about some history teacher, I forget where, maybe in California, some history teacher somewhere that actually puts Columbus on trial in his class, but not just Columbus. He puts Columbus on trial along with Rey Isabella from Spain, and the crew of the Nina, the Pinta, and the Santa Maria, and the native Taínos are also defendants. And the students represent the different groups, and there are students that also sit as judges, and they have to defend themselves, and the students are tasked to enter judgment on who is to blame for the massacres, for what happens. And the interesting thing is how much more nuanced, how much more careful the consideration is by these kids than I think that you'd ever find adults do.
Right. They're interested.
Well, because they haven't had all of these years of perceptions being forced upon them. They're actually creating them. They're actually looking at it from a clean perspective. You know, they're not entrenched in some view at this point. So, yeah.
Yeah, it really makes a big difference to have. I like having audiences that are intergenerational, interracial, your religion, all of that. That's what we really strive to have, diverse audiences, because one of the goals is to bring people who are coming from radically different perspectives into the same space where they can exchange, you know, their ideas and thoughts and so forth like that. We've had that range. We had a performance out in Suffolk, Virginia a few years ago, where we were doing the play, and suddenly from the audience, we had a voice that shouted, Nat Turner, kill my family.
Whoa.
And it was a 70-something lady who was a descendant of one of the victims of the Nat Turner insurrection. And she was looking at the actor playing Nat Turner, if he indeed was Nat Turner. And I said to her, ma'am, we're going to finish the play and then have that conversation. And indeed we did. And in fact, there's a clip of it on YouTube that I would, you know, encourage people to go see. We also had in the audience that day members of the Sons of the Confederacy who had heard about the play and were concerned about what we were going to do to their flag.
Right.
One of the best post-show conversations we've ever been involved with, you know. And in fact, I saw one of the members of the Sons of the Confederacy and the woman who was playing Harriet Tubman exchange contact information. And I saw that as progress.
All right. 16 minutes past the hour, you're listening to 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville, and this is Homegrown, your show about local art. We are here with Sherry Bailey, playwright and director and presenter of the Abolitionists Museum. in the, I got to ask, because I'm a theater geek, okay. I got to ask, was the title in any way inspired by Wolfe's famous play, The Colored Museum?
No, actually, although I, you know, that, now that you say that, maybe subconsciously. but it was really the idea of bringing these historical figures together, and I wanted to figure out a way to do that, and because they all were 19th century, but they lived at different times and so forth like that, and so, but that's was the genesis of the title.
So, how did you write these different people? Did you do a lot of reading of things that they had written during their lifetime?
Absolutely.
Okay.
A lot of their writings and speeches, and all of them had a fairly you know, powerful impact on the slavery narrative. You know, Harry Beecher Stowe's Uncle Tom's Cabin is credited with actually being one of the sparks to finally start the Civil War. And mm-hmm. David Walker's appeal, many people don't know who David Walker was, but he wrote a book, a 76-page pamphlet that really literally, you know, had people running, you know, doing all sorts of censorship and so forth like that. They didn't want anyone to read it. So a lot of their writings and speeches, particularly the Gettysburg Address, is a core to this play. In fact, that gets recited from beginning to end, all 220 words of it, you know. But pretty much the goal was to, again, bring the attention to the symbols that we're dealing with here in the 21st century. In fact, one of the characters says, this is not their problem. This is our problem in the 21st century, what to do with these symbols. And mm-hmm. so wanting to be able to create that bridge from that past to our present day.
So the actors you have doing this play, this is a troupe that you've worked with and that you're regularly touring with, right?
No, they're and I like this that we always have a combination of novices and you know, professional folks working.
Interesting.
The cast. And one of the reasons being that I, again, want other groups to know that you can take this package and do it yourselves, you know, and create this conversation. So we have a range of folks from here in Charlottesville, really, that we had auditions for. And, you know, they came up. But they're volunteering their time as activists, really, to be a part of this. And so I hope that folks will come and join us. We have three performances coming up this weekend, starting on Friday the 28th. That will be at 7 p.m. in the City Council Chambers. All performances are free to the public.
Yeah, how did you get performance space in the City Council Chambers?
Thank you.
It is actually a great space for, you know, to do this particular play. And I encourage folks to come down and see how we kind of use the space and turn it into a theater. And the next day on Saturday, the 29th, we'll be at The Haven, which is near the city, the Robert E. Lee statue, located at 112 Market Street, and that show is at 3 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
And then Sunday, we close out at Ebenezer Baptist Church at 113 South Street Northwest, and that's a 3 p.m. Curtain as well on Sunday the 30th.
Three chances to see the show, City Council Chambers, The Haven, and Ebenezer Baptist Church. You can go see it, even though I can't pronounce it. No need to miss it. Sherry, thank you so much.
This has been a pleasure. I thank you for having me here.
Thank you. All right. 20 minutes past the hour. 94.7 WPVC, the Progressive Voice of Charlottesville. So let's talk about some of the other artistic events that we have going in our artistic town. This is the last day for Bullet for Unaccompanied Heart at Four County Players Smaller Theater, The Cellar. Don't miss that. Currently running from now to November 5th, The Electric Baby at Live Arts, speaking of theater. And going on today, Where I'm From, Finding Your Voice Through Poetry with instructor Ebony Walden at the Charlottesville Writer House. Also, starting today and going until October 27th, Art Lab at Mountain Lake Biological Station. Nature-inspired artworks on the first floor of UVA's Ruffin Hall. Also going on today, The Bridge PAI presents a documentary made by students of Lighthouse Studios of The Bridge's 2016 resident public artist Jennifer Hoyt Tidwell's production, No Wake. So if you guys remember Jennifer Hoyt Tidwell, she did a production of No Wake. We actually had her on the show, talked about it. Well, guess what? students from Lighthouse Studio. We're doing a documentary about it, and you can see that documentary today, screening at the Bridge PAI, with a question and answer period tomorrow. Speaking of tomorrow, Anti-Up Comedy, the open mic Halloween edition at the Anti-Room, October 25th. Art Speaks, World Language Tours. UVA's Fralin Art Museum offers museum tours in languages other than English. What? Somebody call Homeland Security. October 25th, open mic at Charlottesville at the Anti-Room featuring Cicada Radio. October 27th, the Central Film Series at the Central Branch of the Jefferson Madison Regional Library goes on this week. It's A Ballerina's Tale, a documentary about ballerina Misty Copeland, the first African-American woman to be promoted to a principal dancer at the American Ballet Theater. This documentary showing is free with refreshments. Also on the 27th, the Kluge-Rue Aboriginal Art Museum Collection presents an artist talk with Aboriginal artist Damien Shen. And of course, the MFA reading series from Millie at Millie Joe Coffee and Gelato continues on the 27th. Michaela Calgill and Olivia Haberman making an appearance. Boom. October 28th, Out of the Closet, UVA Art Department faculty displays pieces of their personal collections on the first floor of Ruffin Hall as part of UVA's final Friday art event. Don't miss on the 28th, Bent Theater Improv at the Bridge PAI. And on the 29th, there's Spooked, No Pipeline Art Installation, a three outdoor land-based artworks that demonstrate how we are spooked by the Atlantic Coast Pipeline. And speaking of spooked, October 29th, Horror Writing. Horror Writing? Horror Writing, The Love of Fear, with instructor Warren Rochelle at the Charlottesville Writer House, followed by a literary salon with Rochelle talking about it, and five kids in a day glow van and a talking dog. Yikes. And here's just some of the musical options that are available to us. Today, Jazz Jam Brunch with Bob and Tom at Fellini's. Also, Alice Clare and Tommy Proud at the James River Brewing Company. John Dearth directs the UVA Jazz Ensemble with guest artist composer Dara Goradia and Emerald Flame. Catch the Emerald Flame, by the way, tomorrow at the Front Porch Roots Music School. Also today, Women's Acapella at the First Presbyterian Church, featuring an arrangement of the medieval chant of Laura Walters' Magnificat and the poetry of Edna St. Vincent Millay. It's a benefit for people and congregations engaged in ministry. On the 26th, Quiet Fire at the Bebedero. Waterside Wednesdays continue at Glass House this week with Thomas Gunn. It's the Jazz Collective No. 9 at Fellini's No. 9, and Gorillas Do Gorillas at Rapture. On the 27th, Neil Goodlow and Lon Tate at Dirty Nelly's, Richmond's Juwala Collective, Tequila Mockingbird, and Two Ton Trapezoid at the Anteroom. On October 27th, our man David Tewksbury.
Amen!
With Gina Sobel and Brett Jones at Pro Reynada Farm Brewery. Larissa and the Illusionistics at Fellini's. On the 28th, get ready for it. Open mic night at James River Brewery. Shenandoah Valley's Stratocaster Fats and the Church Street Review. DJ Tulo at Tavern on the James. Charles Owens Trio at the Bebedero. And Soul Transit Authority at Fellini's. On the 29th, get your dancing shoes out. It's the Gladstones Acoustic featuring Charlie Pasterfield and Bob Gerard at Knight's Gambit Vineyard. Electric U, Virginia's premier EDM party at the Ix Art Park. Oliveira's Trio at Almaro Ciderworks. LG and Friends at the Bebedero. And the Robert Jospe Experience at Fellini's. Of course, every Sunday it's Travis Elliott at Rapture. Every Monday, the singer-songwriter night at the local. Every Tuesday, a traditional Irish session at the Tin Whistle Irish Pub. Every Wednesday, Bob and Anna and Cafe Katura. And the Mike Rosensky and Jeff Decker Trio, who are Jeff Decker Quartet at Miller's. And every Thursday, speaking of Miller's, you can catch the John Dearth Quintet, because every once in a while, you just got to come down to Dearth. And those are just some of the artistic things going on in an artistic town. If you're an artist and like us to talk about your art, tell us about it so we can talk about it. It's just that simple. It's just that simple. www.facebook.com/homegrownwpvc and our email address homegrown947@gmail.com. This week, Monday, Diner Favorites, Charming Disaster, Gotta See These People, featuring darkly comic duets about love, death, crime, and the supernatural. Ooh, supernatural! Oh my God. Today, On Tuesday, Erie, Pennsylvania, Sean Patrick in the New Grass Revolution. Wednesday, it's Jim Wave. Oh, zoinks, it's Jim Wave. Thursday, Bluesman Bill Adams. Friday, Asheville's Justin Payne.
Are you okay, hon? You were kind of slipping into some different accents today.
Don't question my sanity.
I'm not questioning your.
Gotta come at me.
I'm not questioning your sanity. I'm just, you know, I'm concerned.
When we can have questions for our next guest.
Oh, okay. Well, let's move that right along then. Well, we have Brooks Wellman and Barry Sisson, the director of Corporate Grant and Foundation Giving from Lighthouse Studios and Indie Film Minute. Oh my God. Hey, Brooks. Hey. Thanks for coming back to see us.
Thanks for having me back.
Okay, so you guys are here to talk about Indies at Vinegar Hill Prep School. What is that? What is that?
Prep School is an independent film. First-time director, Sean Nichols Lynch. It's a film set in a privileged environment, maybe a pressure cooker of a prep school,
right,
turned up through sports culture. The action happens within the environs of the rugby team within this prep school. So there's a whole lot of privilege and not a lot of good parenting going on.
Oh, all right.
So prep school explores the result of what can happen when that's the case.
It's a very topical when you say bullying,
mm-hmm,
yes,
locker room banter,
oh,
yes,
privilege run amok at a
oh
private
my,
school.
Locker room banter. Mm.
There's a lot of topical.
So it's a fictional film. That's what you're saying. More like a fantasy.
It is a narrative feature that I suspect depicts real life.
That's right.
I wonder where we may have seen that lately. I'm there's something. It's right on the tip of my tongue. Where you know, that whole locker room thing. It's pinging in my brain somewhere.
I don't think we're allowed to connect the locker room and the tip of your tongue.
Oh, on this show.
Clinton, you are not supposed to work blue.
Who said that?
That's why we have me.
I thought that's why we had the FCC. How you doing this morning, guys? Hey. Looking for your next job with the cable committee? Tell us about the Indie Film Minute.
Well, Indie Film Minute is an idea that came to me when we were distributing our last film. We wanted to expand the market for independent films by bringing attention to the good ones. We feel like, you know, people could happen across some indie films that are maybe a little too experimental. They see one, they don't like it, then they say, nah, I'm not interested in indie film. We want to bring people in to have a good indie film experience and become a part of the audience that spreads the word. Because this indie film is an art that I think is an incredible art that puts us in touch with the people around us and puts us in touch with other lives that we can't see or live, and yet we can for an hour or so.
Now, people have used the phrase indie film, and I've heard the phrase independent film. Independent of what? Like, what is the indie behind indie film? What does that actually mean?
You know, I can answer that in a lot of ways. First, let me give you the traditional answer, and that is any film financed outside of the standard traditional studio system. Now, what that means today is any film that isn't a tentpole, because Hollywood has gone into the tentpole business plan. So let me expand it and say that I feel like indie film is the kind of film that has the freedom to express the artist's view of the story without filtration. So it's born of passion. I need to tell this story. And we particularly love it when it's a young filmmaker or a filmmaker that is doing his own writing and telling his own story. That sort of intensifies the personality of what ends up on the screen and the reality of the story, the humanity within the story.
Well, indie films aren't what they used to be. I mean, a lot of the films that then get bought by major studios and distributed by major studios started out as indie films, right?
Well, certainly the studios pick the cream of the crop, what they feel like their audiences will react to, and they put them out into theaters. Almost every studio, when they started seeing the success of independent films, opened up a branch of their operation to find the ones that they thought could reach a market. And it makes sense to them. You know, they can't make a film for $5 million that an independent filmmaker sees $5 million as a luxurious budget at times. And for all kinds of reasons. Hollywood solves their problems and challenges with money. Independent filmmakers solve their problems and challenges with passion. And I'm going to get it done no matter what. They have to do these things. They're artists, and that artist has to be artistic. Endeavor has to be expressed.
Well, I think in that way, they're a lot like live theater artists. You know, I mean, that's Clinton and I are used to getting it done no matter what obstacle you encounter, especially when it's a labor of love.
Actually, Leslie's used to getting it done no matter what. I'm used to sitting in the corner drinking and tears.
Yes, that's why we work so well together. Clinton says no to everything, and I say yes to everything, and we meet in the middle somewhere.
With a wishy-washy maybe.
You know, artists have to create their art, and I agree there's a big connection between the theater and film art. Not all film actors can be great on the stage. And I think not all stage actors can be great on the screen. And then some of them, you know?
Yeah, some of them do translate wonderfully.
Very, very well. Yeah.
Wonderful. Right. Yeah.
Well, I think every film actor would like to think that they could master the stage.
Yes.
And I think it's maybe a little easier for a stage actor to transfer to film with the right director.
Yes.
Than a film actor to transfer to stage.
Yes.
Stage is very, very immediate.
It is. And film actors are just not used to that. They don't. What do you mean? Somebody's laughing? I don't get another take? I don't understand what just happened.
But I think they all aspire to it because I think it is thought of as the higher art.
Well, I'm biased, but yes, it is.
I'm stroking.
We like him, Clinton. He can come back. So this project is going to bring how many independent films to Charlottesville?
Well, it sort of depends on how many people come out to see them. The current plan is to do a monthly screening, the last Thursday of every month. There will be we still have to figure out what we're going to do over the holidays because there's a few conflicts there. But the intention is last Thursday of every month, Indies at Vinegar Hill. What we do that may be different than what you're seeing every day is we do try and bring in the filmmaker for a Q&A after the screening. It ties.
That's so sweet.
Oh, it makes the experience so much better in understanding the film, but also it ties so well to the Lighthouse mission. I think Brooks can speak to that very well.
Yeah, Brooks, how did Lighthouse get connected with this?
Yeah, it's an exciting partnership for us because for your listeners who don't know, Lighthouse Studio is a small nonprofit here in Charlottesville that teaches kids ages 8 to 18. How to express themselves and what's going on in their lives through the art of film. So,
well, they should know you've been on the show. I don't know how many times.
No, who hasn't listened to the show I was on before? Right.
I'll say
it. But yeah, so last year we taught more than 1,000 students in our area filmmaking. And so one of the things that we think it's really important to do and that serves our students well, many of our students, they gain great technical skills. They learn some soft skills like collaboration, teamwork, planning, and then they go on to do completely other things. But some of our better filmmakers end up going to film school, and that becomes their career. And so for those students, all of our students, but those in particular, it's just wonderful for them to be able to ask their questions to a real filmmaker. So the person that they want to be in 5 or 10 or 15 years is there, and they can ask any questions they want about the film they've just seen that person directed or produced, but also, what do you think I should be doing? What is your advice for me as I go forward in this?
So are you thinking about doing some sort of mentorship program with the filmmakers that come through this collaboration?
Yeah, that would be great. I mean, for instance, last month's screening was amazing. The inaugural Indies at Vinegar Hill was a movie called Father Unknown. And it was almost an accidental documentary. A man who went on this journey with his father, captured it all on his cell phone, and realized, I have a lot more here than just some random footage. And he made it into an incredible documentary. The Q&A after that event was truly magical. The director, who we had known we would be interviewing, also brought for the first time his father onto the Q&A, who his father was the subject of the movie and a really charming man. And our filmmakers were able to talk to that director and ask him questions. And he was able to say, you know, this is a great endeavor for young filmmakers. And so we do hope that we can stay in touch with these filmmakers as time goes on, and that they can give advice to our students and help them.
So far, all of our filmmakers have agreed to be available to the students if they have questions or would like to discuss any aspect of filmmaking. So it's a generous community.
Have they gone to the length of actually watching some of the student films? Is there time for that?
It's a new program, so I really couldn't answer that. I would say not yet. But this is only our second screening in Indies at Vinegar Hill, so we don't have a tradition.
It,
yeah, we got to move it forward.
There's exciting things to be done here.
Well, it's a great idea, and I think what's nice about some of our student work, Barry came in recently before our film festival, and I sort of shoved on him one of my favorite films of the last year, and he really liked it. But what's great is that our students typically produce short films between, say, 3 and 7 minutes. So if you have some top favorites that you think would appeal to a director's project or sensibility or something about what they've done, it's not a huge time commitment for them to get an idea of what our students are doing and even give them feedback.
38 minutes past the hour, you're listening to Homegrown, your show about local art. If you were just joining us, we are talking to Brooks Wellman from Lighthouse Studio and Barry Sisseman from Indie Film Minute. Barry Sisseman from Indie Film. I'm just adding syllables in today. Just, you know, why not? Because there are not enough syllables in the world.
If it's spoken with a smile, I answered anything.
From Indie Film Minute, talking about their collaborative program, Indies at Vinegar Hill. So this is a question I've asked before, and I keep asking it because I haven't quite got an answer and I like, and also because I think it's a fascinating thing, which is for independent films. I mean, most of us are used to big Hollywood films, which are connected with distribution chains and get shown all over the world, and more importantly in China. But if you're an independent filmmaker, I'm fascinated with the idea that there's all of this film that's going on all over the country, all over the state, all over the area, that maybe we don't get an opportunity to see. What are the venues for independent filmmakers to show their work?
Well, you know, you bring up an important thing, and it's one of the key elements of Indie Film Minute. You know, 2-3% of the films that get made every year get seen at all widely. And when I say widely, I mean they showed up at the local art house, whatever that may be,
right.
And many towns don't even have them, and played for a week. So how many people are seeing the great art? The Indie Film Minute is trying to extend that run of this great art. We bring attention to these under-the-radar films that are available for rent so that anybody can see them. So you can go to our website, search for what kind of film you're looking for, hit a button, it'll tell you where you can find it and download it or rent it. So we're trying to, look, we think film is one of the great arts. It deserves, unquestionably,
it
deserves way more than one weekend in a theater and then we never think about it again. It's the kind of thing that should be visited and revisited and exposed and spread, because it does put us in touch with our own humanity, and that makes us better people.
Yeah, I mean, wouldn't you say that it is the... I'm going to throw this out here right off the top of my head. Would you say it's too far to say that it is probably the defining art form of the 20th century?
I'm biased, but certainly I would say that. You say it better than I. I'm going to start incorporating that into my shtick.
Brooks, Barry, thank you so much for joining us. Please give people the when and where for prep school.
Yeah, so that'll be this Thursday, which is the 27th at 7 p.m. Doors open at 6:30. You come, you pay $9 for a ticket, but you get a bag of Vinegar Hill's famous popcorn thrown in there.
Oh, it's been so long.
That's right. It's back. Vinegar Hill and its popcorn are both back. So you can come at 6:30, grab a bag of popcorn. And Barry, do we have an exciting raffle prize this week?
So there's always going to be an exciting raffle prize at the end, because we believe in dinner, or not dinner, but we believe in go see a movie, then go someplace, sit down, have a drink, have a dessert, and talk about it. Expand the experience. So the door prize is drawn at the end, and it's a way to go out on the mall somewhere and sit and talk about your movie.
So come in, buy a ticket, hold on to it, and
I'm
going to
float
winner.
This out there in the running for Best Date in Charlottesville.
That's right.
I don't know, but this is a program, but
and
I want to be in
it. Do it any more affordably? $9.
Right?
I'm saying. Interaction, entertainment, communication, and popcorn. That's romance right there.
All you need.
I cut you off. Sorry, Brooks.
Nope. That's all I was going to say is come out Thursday, and it's like you said, affordable date night.
Brooks Berry, thank you very much. Lighthouse, Indie Film Minute, Indies of Vinegar Hill. Looking forward to this series and seeing how it develops. Looking forward to have you guys back to talk about it again.
Thanks, Clinton and Leslie.
Thank you. Very nice to be here.
Thank you.
45 minutes past the hour. You're listening to 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville, with a very distinct feeling of deja vu.
I think we've been here before. I don't.
The
well,
Sundays blend together.
They do.
You know, it keeps them fresh.
You think so?
What keeps them fresh is great guests like we have here.
Great. Our third guest. Let's get
our
to it.
Our third guest on Homegrown, your show about local art. We've got from Piedmont Virginia Community College, Brad Stolier. Soul Stolier? Because I was jumping forward to Amalia.
I know. It's okay.
I found your ship name. Stomalia. Brad Stoller and Amalia Oswald. How are you guys doing?
Good. Thanks Good. For having
Thank
us.
You. Yes, fine.
Brad Stoller, associate professor at theater at Piedmont Virginia Community College. Amalia, you are a guest director, right?
Yes, I am.
Excellent. And you're a guest director for a fascinating project that you guys have going forward. Tell us about it. Give us the hypsographic view of it, if you would.
All right. So Brad and I are directing two shows at the same time.
What?
Yes. It's had a bunch of challenges, and we've had a lot of fun with it so far. So I am directing Macbeth, and Brad is directing Much Ado About Nothing. So they are rehearsing at the same time. They are running on the same weekends, different times. We don't do the same shows at the same time.
Wait a minute. You don't actually play them at the same time?
No.
See, because I was about to be impressed.
Well, we tried, but then we realized that when you have the same cast in both shows, it doesn't go so well.
Yeah, that might be a problem.
Yeah, so technically it is called Running in Repertory or Running in Rep, and we decided to do this to give the students a bit of a taste of what you might do on the outside world as a professional actor. Specifically, a young one.
Oh, okay, that makes sense. Because when I first heard about the project, I thought, wow, that seems really ambitious. Enough just to do a Shakespeare show, but to do two, run them in rep, why would they do that? That is an interesting reason. How have the students responded to that?
They've responded incredibly well. Every response I have gotten from people is like, that is incredibly ambitious. And I'm like, yeah. It is, and you throw more at them, and they don't know any better.
Yeah, they step up, right? Because you set expectations high, and then they meet them. That's how it works.
Yes, and they are doing much better than they realize, and that's what's amazing about this whole project.
Cool. So why these two shows? Did you think that they would speak to each other in some way, or... Or was it, did you just decide to do the Eminem production?
Oh my God.
I didn't realize that, the Eminem thing until now.
Shakespeare that melts in your mouth, but not in your hands.
Oh my God. You really went there, didn't you? Okay.
I would say that these plays perfectly complement themselves in what we are doing. So Much Ado is about 95% prose, while as Macbeth has a good deal to almost all verse, but it's not straight iambic pentameter the whole time. There's a lot of scansion education that went through it, scanning the meter, because it is very irregular at points. So it gave the students two very different
types of plays to tackle, but that's still in the same literary canon of being from Shakespeare.
And have they felt the difference? Because frequently Shakespeare, when presented to novices, it's hard for them to feel the difference between Shakespeare in prose and Shakespeare in verse. It's just old-timey talk to them.
Go for it.
I would say that that's just because you're not seeing the best production ever.
Ooh. Ooh. Ouch.
No, I'd say,
and Amalia throws 4 minutes into the interview. Amalia throws down.
Gauntlet.
Famous last words, though. My show isn't up yet, so we'll see.
Gauntlet has been thrown, people. I'm just saying.
I do want to speak to that the plays are so different that they're not having a difficult time, which is, I'm pleased to find out, that they are switching from one play to the other pretty easily. They're not getting, I'm not finding them confused at all, thinking, oh, which play am I in? And that's, so we're finding this to be a good choice. They're really clear which play they're in when they're doing it. So they're not mixing up the language.
Let's see, am I having a fight with my ex-lover, or am I trying to kill my king?
Coming to the Ix Art Park Saturday, the 29th.
Where am I?
Are the two mutually exclusive?
Yeah, really? Well, I think that's a very good question.
Yes.
Are the two productions complementary in their approaches? I mean, how different are the two productions? How much did you guys collaborate in terms of a unified, in terms of unified presentation, or was that even a concern?
I don't think it was ever really a concern. We did have talks, and we have collaborated on things like the set or the lightscapes, that because we do have to share the same light plot. We share the same stage. We share the same actors. So we did auditions together. We did a lot of pre-production and process together. But I would say when it came to actual shaping of our shows, that was a very separate thing. We both come from different backgrounds when it comes to performance, and I think we both played to our individual strengths in our productions.
Yeah, I've just been impressed with what Amalia is doing, by the way. In a way that I couldn't. She's got, as she said, a very different strength. She is. I'm letting her run with that. She's doing such a great job. The students are getting a kind of rigorous, traditional Shakespearean experience with that, and then they are getting the comedic level with me. You mentioned earlier in the pre-interview that didn't quite happen about Terpsichore. My background is in dance, and I look at things from maybe a different perspective than most directors would.
Right, and knowing your background and knowing where, so because full disclosure, Brad and I have known each other for much longer than either of us would care to admit. I think
50 years.
Do we need a number? I think we need a number.
I don't think we need a number.
We don't. But
can you really put a number on relationships? Can you?
Oh yeah,
can
you
they
can.
Be quantified?
Oh yeah, they can.
We'll let other people do that. But knowing your work and being familiar with you, and knowing how much you're dedicated to physical presentation, physical performance, I was surprised to hear you doing Much Ado. I would have thought that Macbeth would have...
That does not surprise me at all.
Oh, really?
No, that doesn't surprise me at all, because Much Ado, it's comedy, but the language in it is just lends itself to movement. That doesn't surprise me at all.
It's because in your Much Ado, you're beating up somebody. That's what...
You're beating up
Benedict and you're Much Ado in
your... No, I'm not.
It's like Kung Fu Much Ado in your...
No, it's... No, not at all.
So another thing that's happening in the show, just to kind of take things out of the way, is in Much Ado we have...
Well done.
We have live music, which I really like having as part of productions. And last night I was just at the American Shakespeare Center seeing a production of King Lear where they had a lot of live music as well. We have, and so three of our cast members are actually singing in the production, and I'm just enjoying the fullness of Shakespeare. So what I love about it is that people dance, they sing, they act, they are complete performers.
Now, you did Tempest last year. Is Shakespeare going to become, maybe not a staple, but is it going to have a set place among the theatrical offerings at Piedmont Virginia Community College?
Yes, that is the plan, that we are going to continue to do Shakespeare.
I am thrilled by
joy, joy and rapture over here on this side of the room.
And maybe not just Shakespeare, also his contemporaries, I think, are in getting in the mix there. Possibilities. You gotta keep like Johnson and Marlowe.
Are you giving on the big up to Bear Mountain Fletcher?
Oh my. You know, I love it when you do
accents. Goodness knows the people are crying for more Beaumont and Fletcher.
Does anybody know what we're talking about?
See, I think our audiences by now, when they watch our show, they're sitting there in front of Google.
Yes, just ready to type.
Just because the references know. Come out and we don't stop for
it. We don't stop. They're just going to have to pick it up as they go along.
A little lowbrow, a little highbrow, one over the plate every once in a while. Yeah. It's just...
I think they're probably still stuck on Terpsichore, because that took me a while to kind of... I had to go back in my mind to get that one.
So, Amalia, how are you finding The Great Evil King?
I've always been in love with this play. I think it's one of his really just wonderfully written plays. It's one of the only Shakespeare plays that doesn't have a subplot, so it is very easy to streamline.
Nice.
So I've been in love with this play for a really long time, and I've never been able to direct it, so this is the first time I've been directing it, and I love this play. There's so much humanity in it, and there's so much of ourselves that we can find in it, and I think my biggest concern was that, and still is, that I do hope that no one walks into this or walks out of this production thinking that these characters are inherently evil. Because when you give that characteristic to someone, it dehumanizes the character instead of humanizing them. And so what we're trying to bring in the production is this very, I would say, familiar approach, so that people coming in can say, I've been there, or, you know, I can see what's going on here. Not, what are they saying? What is going on? Let me look at my program for the next 15 minutes.
Well, no, whenever I go to see Shakespeare after not seeing it for a while, it does take a couple of minutes to get your ear back, you know, and you know, after that first couple of scenes, you're like, oh, right, okay, now I know how to listen to this. So there's always going to be a little
bit. A day so foul and fair. What are you saying? Day so foul and fat, you know, just hang with us. It'll come.
Hopefully we don't have hecklers.
Though that would be very traditional.
It would. Yes. It would be very original practices.
No, Clinton's just used to doing Shakespeare in dinner theater at old folks' homes, I guess.
To be or not. Do you need more butter, ma'am? Can we get
waiter?
Can we get some glasses?
Waiter!
Would you guys please let our listeners know dates and times? When can they see these masterpieces?
Well, we open up this Friday with Macbeth, Friday night, 7:30, and then Macbeth again on Saturday. That's the 28th Friday, 29th on Saturday, a 2:30 show matinee of Macbeth. Then we do a flip of the set. And turn it into this, so it starts out dark and ominous.
Dun, dun, dun.
And then we flip it over to a very colorful and playful Much Ado for Saturday night the 29th at 7:30, and finish up the weekend with a matinee of Much Ado on Sunday at 2:30, the 30th. And then you can go enjoy Halloween.
But that's not all. We do have a week break, and then we come back for the reverse of that the week after. So
look at them changing it up.
So November 11th is that Friday, and we open with Much Ado at 7:30, and then the November 12th, we have a matinee of Much Ado at 2:30, and then Saturday night is Macbeth at 7:30, and the entire fall season ends with Macbeth at 2:30 on Sunday, the 14th.
13.
Never mind. Numbers.
There's a lot of numbers in there. There's a lot of switching.
That's a lot of
basic arithmetic.
It's Shakespeare, though.
Yeah, right?
Not my strong
There's
suit.
So much switching in Shakespeare.
So our hope is that people will come back and see both productions and see the same cast do two different shows, two radically different shows, and have an experience of delight and wonder and realize that this is doable and realize what is possible.
And awe and horror and the underlying understanding that not everybody is completely evil.
Yeah, but it is amazing, and I would definitely suggest coming to see both shows, because as much as Brad may my dance and I may extemporize, at the end of the day, it's what this cast did, and they're so 150% in, and they're such really just amazing and awful, as in AWE. / F, not like awful people. Poor choice of words. But they are wonderful.
Okay. We know yeah. some of the people in your cast. We would never think that you would call them that one.
But they are. I am in awe of what they have done, and I'm so proud of everyone in the cast. And it's because of these people that we have the productions that we have, and it is inherently theirs.
That's all I need to hear. If you need to hear any more, you are way too picky for this show. Amalia, Brad, thank you so much for coming on Homegrown.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you.
Hope to have both of you guys back, either together or separately. Head on out to Piedmont Virginia Community College. Catch Much Ado About Nothing and Macbeth.
All right, we want to thank you so much for listening to Homegrown today. We want to thank all of our guests for coming and talking to us. We hope you had an amazing time, because we did too. And we will see you next week. Stay tuned for the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call with Rick Moore.
You've been listening to Homegrown on 94.7 WPVC LP Charlottesville. You can contact the show on Facebook by searching Homegrown Charlottesville. Be sure to tune in again next Sunday at 10 for Homegrown, only on 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville.